Just a quick thing before we start this episode. This episode acknowledges the existence of sex. If that's not something you want to listen to right now, maybe skip it.
Hello and welcome to That's Absurd, Please Elaborate. I am 50% of your normal hosting duo, Julian Huguet. And this episode, the other 50%, Trace Dominguez, he's on vacation. He's sending me amazing pictures of sunsets on the beach from South America. And so, doing the opposite of a vacation, stepping in for him, is Maynard Okereke, also known as the Hip Hop MD. Delighted to have you. Welcome to the show as our guest host, Maynard.
Yes, it's a pleasure to be here, man. This is tough shoes to fill, but I'm going to do my best, all right? I obviously don't look like Trace, but he's having some fun in Brazil, and so you have me here as a special guest to take over, so let's have some fun today.
Definitely tough shoes to fill, but only because his feet are irregularly shaped. You normally can't see that on camera, but they bend at like 90 degrees. He doesn't like talking about it. He's not here. He can't say anything.
Good thing we're virtual and they only see our upper half.
So for those of you who might be listening for the first time, That's Absurd, Please Elaborate is a mostly goofing off and sometimes science podcast where we take interesting, weird, silly questions from listeners, each other, guests, and do our best to apply what we know and what we can research to find, well, you know, something resembling an answer. And for this episode, the question I'm going to be tackling actually comes from you, Maynard. Yeah. This was one you suggested, and you said, what rapper would make the greatest scientist, and what would their game-changing discovery or invention be?
Yeah.
So, first of all, you're really putting me on the spot here, because sometimes Trace does that to me, but, like, I am so out of my depth when it comes to, like... like hip-hop and pop culture as a whole.
Okay.
So why don't you elaborate, though? What were you thinking? Why did you ask this question?
Yeah. Well, for me, it's fundamentally, you know, makes sense. I am the hip-hop MD. I do hip-hop science. That is my platform. And so everything that I talk about in science has a pop culture, hip-hop, music theme, you know, entertainment theme. And so that's where my mind goes whenever I'm thinking about science. I'm always thinking about what cool references can we make? What analogies can we make to pop culture? And so being the hip-hop MD, I'm always fascinated, especially when it comes to music. You know, that was like my first love of science, was listening to hip hop artists and being able to break down like the scientific breakdown of lyrics and, you know, in really deep, you know, deep, insightful lyrics. I've always been a hip hop junkie. And so being able to listen to some deep lyrics always moved me. And so that was the first thing I thought about. We're going to be asking questions and making some analogies and comparisons to science. And so why not talk hip hop? And who better? I know. And you say you're not into pop culture, but I know you. You know what's going on in the world, and you don't have to be a hip hop head necessarily to be able to know, okay, this is the type of music that's out there. And so I'm just curious kind of where your mind would go when you think about kind of fusing that intersection of hip hop and science.
Oh man, don't blow my cover. If people think I know nothing, I can get away with stuff. That's been the way I hide for my whole life.
We've seen you on too many amazing big media platforms for you to say you ain't hip. All right.
The more I learn, the more I feel like I know absolutely nothing, though. That's always true. I'm so interested that you say that you kind of found a love of science through hip hop. Is that the chronology for you? Is that really accurate, huh?
Yeah, I think so, for sure. You know, like I was always a nature nerd growing up. You know, I was always into wildlife and exploring. I used to go to my local pond and catch frogs and snakes and salamanders. Like, that was me. Intrinsically, I just loved nature. But growing up, you know, being into music and being an artist myself, Wu-Tang was always my favorite group of all time, and there was always like some elements of physics in their music, you know. And so that was like, I always just fell in love with just the contradictions and just like the high level terminology of and just the wordplay that infused science into it and made you want to know more. I'd be like, what is that? Then I have to go research it. I have to go look in the dictionary or encyclopedia and figure out what is this word, what does it mean. And that was kind of my first dive into like doing research and trying to understand, and then trying to create lyrics of my own that were complex and had some depth to them as well too. So yes, hip hop definitely infused a love of science for me. Absolutely.
I'm so happy you brought up Wu-Tang Clan, because that is part of my answer for you. Also, just to give everybody some context, you have a STEM degree, right? You're actually the one between the two of us who's got like an official stamp certificate from an accredited university that's like, this guy knows science. So, but your civil engineering's your background, right, as well?
Yes. I got a degree in civil environmental engineering from University of Washington in Seattle. Go Huskies for all my fellow dogs out there. Yeah, so I worked as an engineer for a few years before I did a whole 180 switch into entertainment and then eventually into SciComm. And so engineering was always like, there was something about engineering, and I think maybe I'm biased because I'm an engineer, but I always feel like engineers are like the most versatile STEM field. Like you get a little bit of everything. You get a little bit of the math, you get a little bit of the biology, you get a little bit of the structural, the physics, the chemistry, like you get a little bit of everything. And so I think for me personally, it helped me in my trajectory of what I do now as a science communicator, because I touch on literally all topics. Like nothing is off limits, from space exploration to wildlife exploration, everything in between. And I definitely think having that engineering background set me up for being able to talk about different science topics in a somewhat knowledgeable way, right? I still got to do my research, right? I'm not an expert in a lot of these fields, so I got to do my deep dives. But like all good science communicators and like yourself, you know, that's the great thing about science. Like everybody can be a scientist. You don't have to have a stamp from, you know, an accredited university saying you're in this particular STEM field. Literally just being a human being, you are a scientist. You're observing, you're making educated guesses, making decisions, analyzing, doing research, and literally every decision that you make. And so we're all scientists at heart. I think we got to remember that.
Oh, you are just A plus segue, because to tackle this question of which rapper would be the best scientist, I was going to go the cheesy route, right? And I was going to be like, Maynard, what makes someone a scientist? And you hit it on the head, right? It's a person who is inquisitive and curious about the world around them, and then they apply a method to discover, you know, the answer to the questions that they have, right? They form a hypothesis and they test it in some way, and then they refine their knowledge and they go back and they do it over and over and over, and they keep learning and growing and testing and adding to the wealth of human knowledge that we all pool from. Mm-hmm. So with that in mind, I think there's a lot of hip hop artists that definitely fall into these categories. But the first place I went as a not particularly a pop culture savvy adept person, I went into my realm of that I know, which is nerdcore rap.
Okay.
Have you ever listened to nerdcore?
I mean, I don't know exactly like what would be considered nerdcore, because I mean, in a way, like you can take any type of hip hop song and make it nerdy if you want to. You know, any cat. I don't know if there's. I'd be interested to know. I'd be interested to see what your terminology of nerdcore or an example of a nerdcore. Mm-hmm. Artists, because I don't know if anybody makes nerd, because to specifically be nerdcore, I don't know.
Right. I'm, you know, having trouble picturing anybody calling like Tupac Shakur, like, oh yeah, your lyrics, I could interpret these in a nerdy way. Mm-hmm. So the genre that I listened to a lot like 10 years ago, nerdcore, is literally like dudes who are computer programmers and stuff, like during the day, and like rappers on the weekend. Yeah. The godfather of nerdcore is a guy named NC Frontalot, and he's got songs like a bizarro genius baby about his child that's like way smarter than him and is getting like the Fields Medal and is upset that she can't have the Nobel Prize because of some rumor. This is a fun tangent, but like there's no Nobel Prize in math, so the rumor is that Alfred Nobel caught his wife having an affair with a mathematician. Sadly, that's not the real reason. It's just that he didn't think math was like that important, which is kind of surprising. Lyrics that are like super dedicated to being nerdy, or like MC Chris has Fett's Vet, which is a rap about how Boba Fett is just grinding being a bounty hunter in the Star Wars universe because he's got to pay for his Corvette, you know, that's all it is to him. But I think that's too on the nose, and I don't think it's what you're getting at, right? Because these people are like, they're nerds, right? And probably maybe like a bit of a science background, but like, I think we want to know, if we look at the slate of like top tier talent, in the world of hip hop, who do we think would make a great scientist?
Yeah,
I have some candidates.
Absolutely. Okay. All right. What you got?
MC Hammer once shared one of my science YouTube videos, which was really surreal.
Oh, wow.
I know.
He was too legit to quit.
He was. He still is. He's not quitting. And he's a guy, if you actually look at what he talks about today, he loves talking about science, but also philosophy and a lot of different topics.
He did turn into a preacher.
Yeah.
You know, preaching the gospel, there's definitely, you know, you could break down some science elements within that for sure.
I think he would invent pants that could double as parachutes. I think that's too easy, though.
I like that. If you really think about it, that would be the perfect liaison to a product. If you're just like, hey, MC Hammer is going to create a product that all of society is going to use. That would make absolute sense. Hammer parachute pants. It would be the easiest sell of all time. You would immediately get it. The branding is so on point. The marketing is so on point. Like, how can you deny that? MC Hammer parachute pants.
Yeah, right. You pull the ripcord and your pants just like poof out, and then you gently, I guess you'd float to the ground like upside down. It might be a little inconvenient, but we'll work out the kinks in testing.
Okay.
Another hip hop artist, though, super into science, is one of the founding members of the Wu-Tang Clan.
Yes.
GZA.
Yes.
Which I had no idea.
Yes, GZA the genius. The name in itself says science already. GZA the genius. Absolutely. You've probably seen him many times on Star Talk with Neil deGrasse Tyson as well, too. He's collaborated with him many times.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. He's got a program called Science Genius, which he tries to educate high school students in New York with hip hop and like get them interested in science. So, you know, for a lot of people who discover that, they might follow a similar path that you did of like learning about the world and curiosity and exploring things to a greater depth from one of the founders of the Wu-Tang Clan, which is so cool. Can you imagine like the opportunity of like GZA comes to
high
school?
Even that, like he's done high school stuff with kids, but he's actually a professor. He's actually, I can't remember the college that he's taught at, but he's done a number of lectures across the globe on different science topics as well too, which is pretty fascinating. So, I mean, imagine being in your college class and GZA the genius walks in and delivers you your lecture for the day in your astrophysics class. I mean, that's crazy. You know, because I mentioned earlier about Wu-Tang and Wu-Tang being one of the hip hop groups that kind of sparked my love for science. And GZA is right there with being one of them. Absolutely. And all of his album projects always had an element of science. He'd always wordplay physics in there, biology elements, origin, evolution. Mm-hmm. I mean, he talked about literally everything. He's really well-versed in a lot of different STEM fields. And so that is a perfect one because that is an example of one that definitely influenced me for sure. I like that. GZA the genius.
You know, before I knew anything about Wu-Tang, except that they were not to be trifled with, as I understand it.
Suddenly.
You know, I had a friend in high school that loved Wu-Tang Clan, and he would tell me about them. He's like, oh, there's these nine dudes, you know, and they have they're super influential, and like one of their albums is Enter the 36 Chambers. And me being a massive nerd, I was like, nine members, 36 chambers, that means four. So, well, a heart has four chambers, and I looked into it, and yeah, sure enough, like the album titles are referenced to like the hearts of the nine members, you know. And I'm like, that's a biology nerd is among them, 100%,
100%,
for sure.
That in itself, right there, is just the purest. Like the purest form, because from somebody outside looking in, hearing, you know, these lyrics and hearing this group, you know, from New York, how they're dressed, their swag, you wouldn't put them in that bracket of someone that's going to make some unique scientific references, right? But even at the core of the group, the foundation of the group, I mean, all of the individual artists' names are all based off of old, like, Wu movies, like literally old kung fu movies, you know? And then that in itself is a nerd side as well, too, when you think about gaming and you think about, like, that is nerdy. That is nerdy. Kung fu flicks?
That's exactly what I was going to say, right? Like, if you've got being obsessed with old kung fu movies is super nerdy. Yeah. So when you said, like, oh, what's nerdcore? I'm like, there's some that, like, definitely fall into it. And some that, like, I would say, you know, like, real hardcore gangster rap. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't know if I would categorize that. Mm-hmm. But I think you could make a case that Wu-Tang is
nerdcore.
Is nerdcore or nerdcore adjacent.
Yes, absolutely.
For sure.
That's why I was like, when you said about categories, right, of nerdcore categories. stories. Obviously, yeah, you have the ones that are like, hey, this is my lane. I'm specifically making music to go into this lane because this is what I know. And I, you know, I work as an engineer or I work as a software engineer or whatever. And then I make music on the side. And so all of my music pertains to that. But then you have that other side of, you know, these cats that grew up in the streets, you know, that grew up in violence and are talking about street life and drugs and all these other things, right? But they're also nerds. They watch kung fu flicks. And so everything that they talk about is spit within that vein of their life and their lifestyle and their fashion, the clothing. But it's all fused with this nerd element that they all have, which started from them watching kung fu flicks. I mean, that in itself is nerdcore right there. I love it.
Anybody can be a scientist. Anybody can be a nerd. I had to consult, to me, someone who is an expert, right? Eventually, I knew I was out of my depth, right? Mm-hmm. I was like, I got Hip Hop MD coming on. This is the perfect question to tackle. Am I the perfect person to answer it? Mm-hmm. And I decided after a while, no. I need to go beyond. So sometimes, you know, with a science topic, I got to call a physicist or an engineer or what have you. And this time, I'm like, I have to call my friend Ashley. Mm. My friend Ashley, okay. Total music aficionado of all genres. She loves hip hop. I called her up and I'm like, Ashley, I have a question about hip hop. And she went, is this because I'm black? And I went, no. No. You know, thank you for making me feel super awkward right off the bat. But I asked her your question and immediately mm-hmm. Ashley's response was Lupe Fiasco.
Ooh, that's a good one.
And
that's a good one.
She had some very compelling reasons. Mm-hmm. And I hadn't thought of it. I'm, you know, Lupe is not usually at the top of my mm-hmm. mind. And I went through his discography a little bit mm-hmm. and I started to see it. Mm-hmm. Like one of his most popular songs on Spotify, Superstar.
Yep.
And I'm like,
star,
all right.
You say you are.
Oh, we can't get the rights to that. You got to stop. I can't let you sing that. Right. But he's got lyrics in it about improving a design, doing something new, right? I'm like, okay, yep. I see that. I see a bit of scientist, bit of engineer, bit of a tinkerer in there. Mm-hmm. Also, if he's going to have an invention, if he's talking about, you know, superstars, I think that means he would find a new entire way to categorize stars, specifically supermassive stars.
Ooh.
I think he would develop some instrument.
Would you be a theoretical astrophysicist?
I could see that. I could see that.
Studying supermassive black holes. I like.
Ooh. Mm. Yeah, like the help redefine sort of the stellar like life cycle. I could see that. And I ended up doing sort of a big nerd deep dive into like how stars are categorized, right? Mm-hmm. And I just thought it would be fun to talk about that a little bit. Like, have you ever seen a Hertzsprung-Russell diagram?
I don't think so, no. Or maybe I have, but you have to explain what it is.
Yeah. So about 100 years ago, right, scientists were still trying to figure out, like, what's the deal with stars?
Mm-hmm.
You know, to kind of paraphrase Seinfeld. But
yeah.
What's happening with all these things, right?
Yep.
And they were starting to realize, like, we can analyze their spectrums and we can see, like, the colors that they put out. And we can kind of figure out their actual, like, standardized luminosity, right? How bright they are. Regardless of how bright they appear, because, of course, the farther away, the dimmer they look.
Mm-hmm.
And so two guys independently came up with this way of kind of graphing the light output of stars against their brightness. And it actually made a lot of things about stars start to fall into place.
Okay.
And that's the Hertzsprung-Russell diagram. Mm. And so we start seeing this pattern where, like, very, very bright stars also tend to be blue and dim stars tend to be red. And there's this line that kind of cuts across it that's now known as the main sequence. And mm-hmm. we realize that most stars in our galaxy fall into this sequence.
Yeah.
But then there's branches off of to red giants. And then there's a little pocket down in the corner of white dwarfs. And mm-hmm. this whole chart made us start to understand how stars basically go through their life cycles and form. And before we understood really that, like, fusion, what was powering stars, mm-hmm. we started to put together that, like, oh, big massive stars are hotter and bluer. Why could that be? And start to explore on that.
Mm-hmm.
So I think Lupe Fiasco, he could possibly add a new branch off of that if he develops a telescope,
okay,
or that categorizes new supermassive stars in a way.
Mm.
But then I also looked at his other discography. One of my favorites of his is Kick Push.
Yeah.
Right?
Yep. Another classic.
Mm-hmm. And I realized he also did a residency at MIT.
Oh.
He's spent a year there as a professor teaching like comparative media, but he mm-hmm. also does a lot with students that are, you know, more on the technological side of MIT, which is mm-hmm. like he had a one day like coding and like rap lyric challenge called Code Cipher, where he
nice.
Tried to get students to program something that would visualize code and lyrics in a different way.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think pretty good chance that he ends up teaming up with these students and creating a hoverboard, which
okay.
for me would change. I just want Back to the Future to happen.
Yeah.
That's all I'm saying.
A real hoverboard, a hoverboard
right.
that actually hovers.
Yeah.
Not on wheels.
No.
We don't want no more wheeled hover. We want an actual hoverboard.
Not what hovering is. That's just rolling in another way. No, I think he could do that. But what Ashley turned me on to was the fact that he's already an inventor, and he's collaborated with people working on generative AI to make tools to explore language and, you know, help artists write lyrics for hip hop. And that to me was fascinating. He's partnered up with Google in a project called TextFX. And, you know, originally it's so funny. I was watching interviews with the Google engineers, and they're like, we thought, you know, we'd make him something that just writes lyrics for him. And we were surprised when he said no. And I'm like, really? You're surprised an artist didn't want a computer to just do the job for them? Like, to me, that's like such a rift between like a lot of engineers and programmers that are like, I could automate this whole process. And an artist is like, that's not the point. That's not what I want at all.
Yeah. There's an element of creativity that all artists have. Right. And like, you don't want
right.
that creative flow to be taken, you know? And sometimes when we think about automating, it takes away the spontaneity of just different elements. Right. And I think that's intrinsically what we love as artists is kind of that unknown.
There's that. I think definitely what we love about art is that it makes connection to other humans, like just another way to facilitate that. Right.
Mm-hmm.
And artists basically, you know, art is just a product of what these artists think and feel and what they want to express about themselves, and they find new and novel ways of doing it. And having a piece of software just write the lyrics for you, I think part of the reason people don't go for that is because we know that there's no actual humanity involved in it. So instead, what Lupe said to these Google engineers was like, I don't want something to write for me. I want a tool that helps me think of language in new ways and helps me explore meaning of words and find new ways to use them to express myself.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought that was awesome.
Yeah.
So he's got an interview where he talks about how they came about creating this. And it's clear he's also just a huge nerd. Like, he talks about how important technology is for the entire genre of hip hop. He talks about how direct drive turntables made, you know, having break beats easier to do because you could be really accurate with the beats per minute. And how, like, of course, if you know hip hop, you know about an 808, right?
Yep. Mm-hmm.
It's so funny because the 808, which was a drum machine from like the 80s.
The OG drum machine.
OG.
Which a lot of artists today, like really dope artists, still utilize because there's some elements that you could only get from an 808, you know, some really just authentic raw sounds.
Yeah. And it's so funny because it was like the 808 was a flop commercially. Mm-hmm. They only sold it for like 3 years, but it's like so ingrained in hip hop. There's like album titles with 808 in it. There's a video game I love called Hi-Fi Rush. That's a rhythm game, and the robot cat in it is named 808. Like, if you know hip hop, you know what an 808 is, and you know like how many iconic beats it was. You know the instrument that was used for that.
Yeah, and that's the dope thing about even just music, right? You can break things down to its core elements. You can listen to a beat and know, oh, okay, this was made with some 808 drums. Like, that's how unique and authentic and rich that sound is that you can specifically identify that in a song, like, oh, that's an 808 used on that, you know, that part is dope.
Yeah. So Lupe's got love and appreciation and understanding for a lot of the technological things that went into making hip hop the genre it is today.
Mm-hmm.
And he's definitely a very inquisitive guy when it comes to like how language is useful and can be changed and shaped to say what he wants.
Yeah.
And generally just also embodies those qualities of a scientist of like being inquisitive, wanting to know more about the world and finding ways to explore it.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm going to go with my friend Ashley's answer. I think it was super solid.
I like it.
Lupe Fiasco. And I think his invention is something that he's already working on, which is really that these AI tools that artists can actually use to make art, as opposed to replacing the artist.
Replacing the artist, And I like that element. I think that's really cool because you're right, right? And I think there's always a big fear around AI. And, you know, I learned something really interesting at this past CES event, the Consumer Electronics Show that I went to. For those that don't know, it's the biggest tech events in the world, biggest electronic shows where all the new phones, gadgets, gizmos galore you can think of are all presented and debuted at this event in January of every year. But someone mentioned, because AI was a big thing of discussion here at this event because it's infused in literally everything that we use. But somebody said simply just replace AI with software and just look at it as software, because that's ultimately what it is, right? And when you replace AI with software and you start now utilizing that terminology and all the things that we've been saying AI with, and you just say software, it makes so much more sense. And I think it actually makes it a lot more relatable and understandable about how this can be utilized as a tool and what it actually does for us. And I think that's really interesting when we talk about the creative side when it comes to artists, being able to not necessarily replace artists where it's like, oh, we just put this into some software. Now we can actually utilize it as a tool to support the creative elements that an artist has, right? To be able to now think about word patterns. Maybe I want to switch up a flow and I want to be able to hit different notes and different layers and different rhythms, right? I'll do a 1, 2, 3, 4, or I want to hit an eighth note or whatever. Now you can have this software come in and be like, hey, these are ways that you can perfect your style or be able to now ride a beat in a different way. I think that element of using it as a tool is really profound. I like that.
Yeah, just another thing to help the genre grow and evolve, just like a turntable or like an 808. And I thought that was really cool. Now, I did have a thought though.
Okay.
Do you have somebody you would nominate as a scientist who would make the best rapper? Because I thought of one.
Switching it back around. Someone that's already a scientist, so we're going to switch them. They're going to make a rapper. I like that.
It can be anyone from history, too. Have you considered this?
I've never considered that. We're going to put it on the spot. I've never considered that. Never thought about it. But I do. And the first thought that comes to mind, only because I've heard him rapping as of recently, is actually Neil deGrasse Tyson.
Oh, okay. That makes sense. That does make sense.
I've listened to Star Talk many a times, but he did have a TikTok where he did rap some bars. Not necessarily like, you know, all out rapping, but, you know, he had some little wordplay to kind of break down some, you know, physics element that he was talking about. And I was like, okay, I see you, Neil, with the bars. I think why I say that and why I think it works specifically for him is not just that he's, you know, obviously a well-renowned scientist, but he's also, when you really think about it, he's a linguist. He has a way with words. He has a way of communicating and telling stories that really kind of enamor you, you know, and then that voice and that rhythm. I'm big when I listen to hip hop artists, one of the other layers to it, right? It's not, you obviously have to have dope production. You have to be a dope lyricist. Your content has to be fly, but I'm also big on your voice and the sound of certain artists. You know, there's some artists that present themselves, the way they speak, whether it's a deep, layered, rhythmic voice, and then some might have a high, snappy voice, you know, that maybe doesn't resonate or fit with the beat. You know, I think Neil has a perfect element of all those because he knows how to just kind of harmonize and layer things and be deep when he needs to be, but be loud and resonate when he needs to be. And I think those are all elements of an artist, especially when you think about a musical artist that he can bring to the table in a unique way. So I think all of those elements would actually make him a very, very good hip hop artist. So I'll go with Neil just off the top of my head.
I sprung this question on you just now, and I think you already have thought about it more deeply than I did. But do you want to know my pick?
Yes, I do.
My pick would be Bernoulli.
Mm.
Swiss mathematician Daniel Bernoulli. Do you know why?
Because his principles?
Can you guess? Because that guy understands flow. For those of you who don't know, Bernoulli did a lot with how like fluids flow. He published a book called Hydrodynamica in 1738. So that's the best I got for scientist turned rapper.
Bernoulli. Hey,
thank you.
I always think about like, what are the elements too of, and I was big into this, especially because I grew up in kind of the battle rap scene and, you know, coming up with dope MC names. So my, when I was in my heyday of working as an artist, I went by Nautilus MC. That was my hip hop name because, you know, obviously I told you I'm a big nature nerd, and the Nautilus is one of my favorite animals. And that's because of its origins. It's a living fossil, right? And to me, when I first heard about the Nautilus and we did some research in it in elementary school, I was just fascinated, like how this organism can remain unchanged for over 100+ million years, you know? And so that, to me, that resonated with me. And I was like, okay, me as an artist, I want to be able to be the staple, a foundation, something that's at the core will always remain the same, right? And so that resonated with me with the name Nautilus MC. So I think about names of artists all the time and like artists that have really dope names. And when you brought up Bernoulli, I was like, that would be an actually dope hip hop artist name, Bernoulli. Like, that would be, you're a math wizard. You know all about flow and patterns and your prints. You stand on your principles.
Yeah.
Like, oh, that's
Bernoulli's principle. It's pretty good.
I like it.
See, you grew up on the rap battle scene. I grew up on the Pokemon battle scene, which I guess by that logic would make my choice, if I were to pick something similar, it'd be MC Omanyte, which is like the Pokemon Nautilus. The Pokemon version of the Nautilus. All right. Well, I think we should take a quick break. And when we come back, Maynard, we'll get to your question. Welcome back to That's Absurd. Please elaborate. We've heard which scientist would make the best rapper and which rapper would make the best scientist. And now, Maynard, it's your turn.
Ooh.
What's your question?
Oh, man. There's so many layers to this question. And, you know, as we talked about me being a nature nerd, this really taps into my nature side as well. But this question, and who knows, we'll keep it PG on this platform. but the question is, what if humans reproduced like plants?
Oh, wait. Oh, I'm thinking about like pollen season and now I'm grossed out, but I'm sure we'll get to that.
Hey, that's why this question is so layered in so many different ways. Our predicament on this one is, how do we keep this PG?
We all got here from...
We'll keep it scientific.
From a process of reproduction, you know? So, like, let's be adults. Yeah. Like, things gotta bang in some way sometimes, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
All right. So, where did your kind of exploration of this question take you?
So, the first thing I thought about, and I think the natural thing to think about when you think about plants and reproduction, and you guessed it, that's the first thing that comes to head, is pollen. Like, we all know of pollen. We know of pollinators. We know the birds and the bees, right? Like, reproduction at its core is always intrinsically tied to plants, right? And when you just really, when you just break it down, we grow up thinking, oh, did your parents teach you the birds and bees? Or now we gotta teach our little baby girl about the birds and the bees and pollen. And it's like, and that's what we think about when it comes to plants. But doing research, as I do as a science communicator, literally 3/4 of like the work that we do isn't communicating the science, it's doing the research and learning more. And so really what this took me down on was this crazy wormhole of how plants reproduce. And the craziest part about it is that the pollination that we think of plants reproducing is only a minute fraction of how the majority of plants on this earth reproduce, which is what actually surprised me. And so that took me to another layer of like, oh, these are all the different ways that plants reproduce. Now, what if humans reproduced in these ways? The benefits and the disadvantages of those different forms of reproduction. So,
Okay. So, all right, I'm on board.
That's where my mind went when diving into this question. And so I think in order to kind of understand what our human reproduction would look like if we reproduce like plants, we ultimately have to first know how plants reproduce, right? And so the first one we talked about is pollination. That's the common one that we all know about. But that only happens in a small group of plants. And those are flowering plants, the angiosperms, as they call
them.
Angiosperms. We're going to go back to our to our high school bio 101 or maybe 102, 103. I don't know where this would have fallen. Right. But we're going to go with the angiosperms. These are what we know of as our typical flowering plants, what we think of when we think of pollen, right? And these happen right. in a flower. Like, we see beautiful flowers. Let's think of our most classic flower. What's the first flower you think of when you think of a flowering plant? What's the first one you think of?
Oh, man. I think of like a daisy.
Daisy?
That's where I go first.
Okay,
yeah.
Daisy. Okay, that's an interesting one. I was going to say like rose.
You're saying that like that's the wrong one. What? Oh, that's the first one you thought of? That's incorrect. Okay, interesting. Nice try.
It'll be an interesting poll to see what's your first thought. That might be like a family feud. Yeah. What would be the top
survey says?
The survey says. I'd be very interested to see where daisies fall. My first thought was rose, and then I went violets. But we know we're talking about these angiosperms, right? They're flowering plants. So we'll do daisies since we asked to talk about daisies. Okay.
So disappointed. Fine, we'll talk about daisies if I have to.
Not the greatest rap name, by the way. Maybe as we go into this deep dive on angiosperms, maybe there might be actually a dope. There's probably dope elements that you can break down about the reproductive cycle of how this works. So we think about these daisies, right? And there's just like we have reproductive parts, plants have reproductive parts, and the reproductive parts are the flowers. So whenever so this is fun fact, when you're giving your partner a rose or a daisy or whatever, a sunflower, whatever bouquet of flowers that they like, really we're giving our partners reproductive parts of plants. Like that's what mm. we're giving our partners. And so there's, you can either
it
look
makes
at it
so much sense.
It makes so much sense, right? Love is in the air. And we hand the bouquet. Mm. It's all about reproduction and love. Like it all makes sense now, right? When you think about it. Mm-hmm. And so these flowering plants, they have multiple different elements. Okay, so they have the male and the female parts. And the crazy thing about it is we always think human reproduction is like complex, right? When you think about sperm and the egg and the way it's got to travel and meiosis and all these different things, right?
Right. How the birds and the bees have to get involved somehow.
Yep.
I never got the talk. I don't know how they play into it.
I never got that talk. I asked my parents like years later, like, y'all never taught me the birds and bees.
When does the bird come in?
Birds are pollinators as well too. So I think that's where they come in. But I never got the talk. I had to learn the hard way. All right. On my own. But these flowering plants have...
Well, you have a daughter, so clearly it worked.
I figured it out, ultimately.
Yeah. Your research was spot on.
Trial and error. So we think about these plants, and the flowers are the reproductive parts. And so they have literally the male reproductive organ and the female reproductive organ all within this same flower. So that daisy that you hold up, there's a male and there's a female part in there. I think like the female part is like the pistil, and then the stamen
yep.
is the male reproductive part. Okay. And the stamen had mm-hmm. the pollen. Really is, if you're going to make the comparison to human reproduction, it's the sperm cells, right? That's what the pollen is, ultimately. And mm-hmm. the reason we have pollinators like birds and bees and bats, right? These different organisms help pollinate plants. The goal is to take that pollen from the male stamen and find a way to be able to get it to the pistil, which is the female reproductive part, okay? And then that's when fertilization takes place, and we all know what happens when you have fertilization. You bear fruit, all right? In humans, that fruit is our children that we have, okay? I got my daughter sitting over here, okay? That could be your children. But in plants, the bearing fruit is literally fruit. You bear fruit, actual fruit, like the fruits that we eat and other different types of fruits, right? And fruits don't necessarily have to be the fruits that we eat. It's just fruit is a kind of a general term for, after the fertilization process, what that plant reproduces now, right?
Trace and I did a whole episode where his answer tackled what is a fruit, and my head never hurt so bad. So
that is a deep one.
And people can check out the past episode if they want.
Yes, yes. Fruit is a very vague topic. There are lots of things to be considered. Yeah. A fruit, okay? But in this sense, it's actually very simple. When you think about plant reproduction, fruit is literally, this is the after the fertilization process, this is what the plant now bears in order to be able to now grow, okay, a new plant. And that's the sexual reproduction. That's just like we have mm-hmm. sexual reproduction, that's plant reproduction when we're talking about angiosperms. And that's very the most direct kind of understandable one that we all can generally relate to. And so if we just touch on that part, right, they would touch on that, the angiosperms, and we ask that same question, what if humans reproduce like angiosperms, okay?
Right.
That's when this gets interesting. That's when this gets interesting, okay?
You're enjoying this too much.
Okay. I am enjoying it because it's just fascinating to think about where this, you know, the things you can do, right? Now, we're stuck on this, on sex, right? Because that's what we know. That's what we connect with, okay?
Right.
But think about the ease. If you're somebody that's like, I just want to have a lot of children, okay? What's the most simplest, straightforward way would be to reproduce like an angiosperm? You literally just... You just hang out, you're doing whatever you do, you're just chilling, and here comes some organism that just takes your sperm and delivers it wherever it needs to go. To some feed, there's a female down the street, and you're like, ah, that looks like a great partner. I would love to be able to go that direction with that partner. Ah, okay.
Right.
You have some, or I don't know what, and it could be any organism. It doesn't have to be birds and bees and bats in the sense of typical pollinators. We're humans, so we can go with whatever. What organism would you want to be pollinated by? I guess there's another question.
I don't know, but I hope they do it while I'm asleep is all I'm thinking. Like, I don't want to be awake and have something come along and be like, please give me your sperm. I'm going to go deliver it to a mate. And I'm like, all right, give me a sec, you know? Like,
but think about it, in a weird way, though, like, we're humans, right? We can, like, we're not just wild animals out there just walking around and then things just come up and snatch our sperm and go. We can actually put some software into this and we can actually create a whole mechanism of how we pollinate things, right? Like there could be a whole technological process behind human pollination. Like, you know, we have IVF right now, right? We are able to inseminate things, right? In some type of way, that's pollination. We
are you suggesting robot bees, sir?
No.
Are you suggesting the human race is like, this whole sex thing is too much. I'm going to make some robot bees that I'm going to make it navigate to my junk and then go to, you know, collect what's necessary and then go to another junk.
We can take it that route. Like, we can definitely go that route where we have some robot pollinators that come by and they do the deed and pass it on to whoever we are going to pollinate with. But in a weird sense, you know, we're always talking about analogies and connecting real life to science, you know, in the work that we do. And this really just came to light as I was talking about it. The literal question is, what if humans reproduce like plants? And when we're talking specifically about angiosperms, in a way, we kind of do it already. Like we said, with artificial insemination, IVF process, all these things. In a roundabout way, that is human pollination. We are pollinating. Okay. We are passing on our reproductive organs, our reproductive cells to a partner, right?
And our genetic contribution to the next generation.
Yep, exactly.
Yeah.
And so it doesn't have to be a robotic bee. It could be your doctor, right? That that you go to in the lab and they take your cells and then they, you know, they process it and they package it and they inseminate it into somebody else or go through a whole nother technological process to be able to pass it on. Like that's pollination, really. And wouldn't you think so?
I hope we continue to do it that way and not literally, like, you know, releasing just tons of pollen into the air, you know, human pollen, let's say, because like that would make allergy season just so horrifying for me. Oh my gosh. Antihistamines would be like the number one seller at every.
And you think about it, anytime you go outside, literally at any moment, even inside, you're inhaling pollen all the time, 24/7, every single waking moment, you're inhaling pollen, you're inhaling plant reproductive parts. We literally have allergies because we are inhaling the reproductive parts of plants. That's
how all the plants doinking in the air around us. Oh, it's horrible.
Exactly.
Exactly. Horrible, disgusting, degenerate. Shame on you, angiosperms.
Hey. And so that is naturally what we're doing at this stage right now. And so, yes, that would be crazy if we literally just sat around all day and we were just tossing pollen into the air. And it was just, and then some partner is just kind of chilling, just cooking. And then it's like, oh, I've been pollinated.
Oh, dang it. It would also mean, though, like you said, like they've got male and female reproductive organs on the same flower, right? Like a lot of them do. I don't think it's universal, but mm-hmm. like that would also mean that we would be like simultaneously pollinating and like pollinated mm-hmm. possibly, right? Like yeah. as we're sitting there, like spewing our stuff and then at the same time be like, oh, I got to make fruit now. Yeah. Oh, no. Like, I had so many plans.
Exactly. But in a way, that form of reproduction in plants is almost more finely tuned and processed because think about it. Flowering plants don't flower, it depends on the plant, right? They don't flower year round, right? They're not spreading pollen year round. There's a specific time. Usually that for a lot of angiosperms that happens in the springtime is, you know, they now gets warmer and you have pollinators that are now in the air. That's when they bloom and then they release pollen mm-hmm. and reproduce. And then after a few months, they stop. You know, there's just that window that they have. So that's an organized reproductive pattern, right? That we can be able to say, hey, during this time of the year, this is when we reproduce. The rest of the time of the year, we just chilling. We just out here chilling.
Everybody, focus on your work. Like, this is mating season. It's only in the spring. Mm-hmm. And everybody else, focus. Get back to your job. Yeah,
there's a lot. That's why I said there's so much to get to, right? Because angiosperms are just one part of the reproductive.
Oh, yeah.
We can't forget about the gymnosperms as well, too, right? These are like our pine trees, our conifer trees, okay? For anybody that's seen pine cones. Anybody that's seen pine cones. That reproductive pattern is, it's kind of, they're similar elements to angiosperms because they actually do release pollen. If you've ever actually gone into a pine tree or come into with any tree that has pine cones on it, during that releasing time of the year when they're pollinating, you can actually shake those cones and you can literally see the pollen on those cones, right?
And then like a sexy saxophone starts playing. Yeah.
And so that process is unique because that pollen ends up going, it's similar like male and female reproductive parts, that pollen now ends up going into the pine cones. And now you have basically a pine cone, which is this sexual reproductive like capsule. That's literally what it is. Right. It's a reproductive capsule whose whole goal is to, we're going to keep this pollen safe. We're going to wait for the right time and the right place to be able to now grow. And so that's literally what pine cones do. They'll take that pollen, that pollen gets inserted. The pine cone will go to wherever it is. Usually it's blown by wind. That's like wind is the primary transportation of these ones, not your typical like bees and everything like that for angiosperms. But that's another form of reproductive patterns that a human could possibly have would be, hey, we're going to have these little capsules that now pass on our lineage to wherever it may be. We can send it, you know, maybe humans and someday, like, well, that's what the postal service would be distributing our sexual reproductive capsules to different parts of the world. And then it shows up at that location and then it gets released. And now you have some child and they go and live on their life. And then they do the same thing when they reach maturity, you know?
Here's what trips me out about plants, though, and plant reproduction, and I think gymnosperms in particular, right, are known for this, is that they also show alteration of generations, right?
Yep.
So, like, not only is it like, okay, yeah, you've got the pollination and whatnot, and who knows where your kid ends up, but, like, the next generation that your, you know, pollination creates would look totally different than you.
Yeah.
Because like a lot of plants and like gymnosperms go through one generation produces gametes, right? Where it's like pollen with haploid DNA, like half the full complement of DNA. Mm-hmm. And then when those gametes meet and merge, right, they form a sporophyte, which releases something that's spores, which can on its own, doesn't have to fuse with anything, become the next generation that looks like two generations back.
Mm-hmm.
So there's this, and the like I said, the generations, they look completely different. Fern, yeah, the gametophyte looks like, you know, what you think of as a fern, but then like the sporophyte is this really weird, kind of sad looking little thing that then drops spores and then those become like a fern, like mm-hmm. what you're used to seeing. It's really weird. Yeah. So imagine if your kid just looked nothing like you. But then when it came time for them to reproduce, then they made like something that looks like it could be your human offspring.
Yep.
Right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Like that trips me
out.
That is
pretty wild, because that's always a topic when you think about when we reproduce, right? What's the first question? Who do you think the baby looks like? Right? Does it look like the mom? Does it look like the dad? But if we reproduce like gymnosperms, that would be completely out the question. You'd have to ask that for the second or the third generation down the line of whether they look like their grandparents or their great grandparents, right? That would be a unique twist to the whole element of, yeah, what does your child look like? A child looks nothing like me. I can't have no proof that this actually belongs to me until the next generation comes out.
Yeah, you know, for a handsome guy like you, that's a shame. But for me, I think it would be best if my next generation didn't look like me. Oh, thank goodness. The curse skips one generation.
But for those that don't know, there's a purpose to that. And that's in all sexual reproduction, right? The purpose is to enhance genetic diversity. Like that's the goal through sexual reproduction. That's an evolutionary trait, because as we improve as we increase the genetic diversity, it sets the stage for our next siblings. And we're talking about humans for siblings that we have. And then in plants, when you talk about the next generation, is so that they can be able to withstand whatever it may be, temperature change, environmental changes. They're able to adapt better because they have specific traits that are unique to that generation. And so that is a specific evolutionary trait is sexual reproduction. So
you mix up that genetic code and you're going to get a random mix, right? Because that's what it is. But like some of those traits that they inherit are going to be more advantageous, and then they're probably going to have more offspring, and so those traits become more established.
Yep,
and
absolutely.
That's literally just the process of natural
selection at its finest. And then that brings up the topic, because we haven't even like talked about, there's so many layers of plants. That's just the sexual reproduction of plants. We haven't gotten to the asexual reproduction of plants as well too. So we talked about the natural selection and increasing genetic diversity. The asexual reproduction does the exact opposite. It's like, it's literally just copy paste. You have a whole, we reproduce like asexual plants, which are typically your non-vascular plants, because that's our other category, right? You have your vascular plants, which are the things you think of with stems and leaves, right, that transport cells, versus our non-vascular plants that are like your algae and your liverworts, right? Like the OG, I call them the OG plants, right? Those are the first plants that blessed land, right? The OG plants, the algae.
The original nine of the Wu-Tang, plants.
Yes, absolutely. There's that portion, the asexual reproduction, because in those plants, it's literally copy-paste. The generations, next generation, all look the same. They all absolutely look the same. And then there's the asexual reproduction in other plants that are not algae. Think of like potatoes, onions, and other plants that propagate, right? And I think the term is like fragmentation of plants. And we do it for all our botanists that are out there, right? And farmers as well too. How do we kind of manipulate and grow crops? There's some plants that literally we don't have to plant a seed. We don't have to distribute fruit or pollen. We literally just take a clipping, clip that off, boom, put in some dirt or some water, and from that clipping, another plant sprouts and grows. That looks exactly the same as a previous generation or the previous plant that it was literally clipped from. So there's that reproductive portion. And even within that, right, you think about like potatoes. If you ever had a potato is literally just the bulb there that holds the nutrients that the plant needs. And then from there, if you've ever left a potato out for long enough, it ends up stemming and it just branches out. It does the same thing happens with strawberries. If you ever grown strawberries, literally it just branches out, another branch comes out, and boom, it continues to spread. And it's copy paste, they take over, and that's how they reproduce. So if we reproduced like potatoes and onions and strawberries and other propagating type plants, that is now an interesting one, because now you're just chilling, you're just sitting in space. And you're like, I need some help around this house. I need someone to take care of the dishes. Boom. I'm gonna extend my tubular or whatever over to this side. And I'm just going to copy paste myself. And that copy paste is going to take care of this task. I'm going to copy paste this side here. I'm going to grow another little branch here, and that's going to do this task. You could actually have an incredible benefit if we just self-propagate, if we're just fragmenting plants.
Disagree, because this happens all the time in sci-fi or something where somebody's like, I'm so lazy, I need a clone of myself, and the clone will do it. And then they clone themselves, and the clone's like, "What? I'm also lazy because I'm your clone. I'm not doing that, right?"
And nothing gets done.
Being a literal couch potato, and you're like, oh, the dishes are dirty, whatever, Spud Julian will handle it. And then Spud me's like, I ain't doing nothing. What I'm going to do, like actual potatoes, is you're going to forget about me under the sink, and then I'm going to take over 4 months from now when you open up and there's this eldritch horror.
That's why you keep your potatoes in the fridge, okay? That's why you keep your potatoes in the fridge. People always say, oh, you leave your potatoes out. You're supposed to keep your potatoes in a dark place. If you don't eat potatoes as fast, you know, as me, you know, and you want to just kind of, you want to have a potato in hand 2 weeks, 3 weeks down the line, put it in the fridge.
Emergency potato. Good to know. I am also imagining, going back to grafting, right, where you like, we do this with apples. If you plant a Granny Smith apple seed, you're not going to get a Granny Smith tree, right? Mm-hmm. So like pretty much all apples that are the same type of apple, they're all grown by just taking like a snippet from an existing tree and grafting it on to like a young growing sapling. Mm-hmm. And I'm just imagining, I'm like, oh man, you know, I really want kids. And I like cut my finger off and I like stuck it onto somebody else's child. And then that child now grows up to look like me. Be like, aha, I've claimed your child. You produced sexually, but that was your mistake. I've grafted myself onto your offspring.
See, that's an interesting one, because grafting in that sense isn't really true reproduction, right? Like that's like that would be the manipulative form of reproduction, and I don't know what human element to compare it to, but because ultimately, right, like we talked about apples, those are flowering plants, those are angiosperms. They produce a seed, right, and that seed, the seed itself is what that is, how that plant reproduces. But we as humans, right, we came in with our technology, with our wherewithal, with our domination of planet Earth, and we're like, oh, we're gonna speed up this process. I don't want to wait for this little seed to grow and sprout and develop into a tree. I'm gonna plant multiple seeds. I'm gonna have all these trees starting to grow, and all I'm gonna do is I'm gonna graft a piece of this tree. I'm going to now connect it to this, and I'm going to get a tree twice as fast than the natural way that this tree actually grows. And so it is a very manipulative reproductive pattern.
I only like one flavor of apple, and so I'm going to make that over and over and over and over again. Like, I only like Red Delicious. I don't know why. Mm-hmm. Why? I don't know how that's apple still, or the worst apple. D-tier apple.
Well, have you ever had a grapple?
Now you're just making stuff up.
No, there is a grapple. And we talk about manipulate. We manipulate plants in that's how we get all these different things. I can't remember what plant or what fruit it is. There's a particular fruit that's not natural, that we only have it because we manipulated a lineage of plants to now grow this.
I believe you're thinking lemons.
Is it lemons?
Lemons do not occur in the wild. They're actually a hybrid fruit, and one of the fruits that are used in that hybrid is itself a hybrid fruit. So it's like second generation hybrid of like basically some Asian oranges.
But that's literally human manipulation. We've manipulated a whole lineage of plants and forced them to grow an entire new fruit that wasn't their original intention. That plant is probably sitting there like, the OG grandparent is looking down and is like, this is what I become now? You've turned me into lemons?
Life didn't give us lemons.
You gave lemons life. So that's an interesting element of the propagating side of plants and fragmenting. If we were able to just literally grow like that, we had just bulbs like potatoes, literally. That's how you get new potatoes. You put that potato underground, and from this bulb that has all these nutrients and the water that the plant needs to be able to now grow, you just sprout from that, and then you get a new potato, and then you get a new stem, and then you get a new potato, and the process just continues over and over and over again. So that's, if we reproduce like potatoes,
it sounds like you're on board. You're like, that sounds great.
I'm on board. I almost prefer that reproductive pattern over angiosperms. I might take propagation over sexual reproduction.
It's true. I don't, you know, sit here inhaling potatoes. I mean, I eat a lot of them, but like not literally out of the air and then feel like kind of a little gross. So yeah, you're right. For the decency of society, if we feel like that's worth protecting, maybe we should all reproduce like potatoes.
But what would ultimately happen is that, you know, because we all do this as humanity, right? We're going to separate ourselves based on your type of sexual reproduction, right? Everybody, we're going to have classism. You know, there's certain groups that wouldn't be allowed or wouldn't have specific rights because they reproduce underground through bulbs. And the flowering group is going to be dominating the rest of the population because they produce asexually and we don't agree with what they do because they're asexual and they're amoral or whatever. That's where plant reproduction and humanity would take us, would be into more division. That's what would end up happening in humanity.
I had that thought when I said alteration of generations, right? I could totally see one generation being discriminated against, you know, like, oh no, that's the sporophyte, gross, like don't you're not allowed here. So a human nature, you think, would fundamentally remain, and that might be a bit of a bummer.
Human nature always fundamentally remains and screws up everything at the end of the day. Yes. So, yeah. and then on our filling out a job application or we're filling out whatever, and we have to put in what we identify as. You know how long that list is going to be?
It's true. Yeah. But then, like, the discriminated against plants are going to form, you know, their own culture and, like, develop, like, art and music. And then the other plants are going to be like, we're going to take that.
Oh man.
Awesome.
That's crazy.
You know, I'm glad we don't do it like plants. I'm just going to say that. Like, it's already complicated enough for me. Specifically, so I'm relieved that I don't have to go through what plants have to do.
Let's be happy that we have a very simple reproductive process. I'll say that much. Mm. The thought sounds great, but the complexities of plant reproduction is a level that we do not want to even venture in. So we should be very happy and satisfied with the pleasure that we have through our own sexual reproduction as humans. That's my final word on that.
Be grateful for sex, everybody. Well, Maynard, the Hip Hop MD, thanks so much for coming by and being our guest host today.
Hey, my man. Thanks for having me. This was fun. And this is what we do. We nerd out on dope topics that relate to pop culture and science. And hey, man, it's an honor to be part of this.
So nerdy. Where can listeners find your stuff?
Yeah. The good old drops. You can find me at Hip Hop Science Show on pretty much all platforms. Real active on Instagram, TikTok, my YouTube channel as well, Hip Hop Science. My website, hiphopscienceshow.com. I do a lot of outreach work. So if you are ever in need of bringing fun, entertaining, and engaging science to classroom, to your workplace, to your organization, I do a lot of speaking events, keynote presentations as well too, the whole full spectrum. So reach out to me, keep in touch, and you can see all the crazy random videos. Some of them might be about plant reproduction like we talked about, or space travel, or sex in space, or whatever crazy kind of pop culture related type of topic that has to do with science, you can find me dwelling in. So definitely check it out.
Awesome. Well, that is going to do it for this episode. Thanks for listening to That's Absurd. Please elaborate. This show was created, written, and produced by me, Julian Huguet, and our normal other creator, writer, producer, Trace. He's on vacation, so, you know, credit to him, but he's having a good time. It was also produced and edited by the wonderful, wonderfully talented, and according to most flowers, incredibly sexy, ooh, Kyle Sisk. Special thanks to our question submitters, including you, Maynard, and if you listening would like to submit a question, there is a form in our show notes, or you can email us at hello@thatsabsurdshow.com or visit our website, thatsabsurdshow.com/ask. We love the weird, wacky, wonderful stuff you always come up with to make us think about, so keep those questions coming. And a special thanks to those listening on Nebula. Nebula listeners get access to ad-free versions of episodes. They can even support us and other independent creators making more interesting, weird, wacky, fun, and original content. So go ahead and join Nebula if you're so inclined at go.nebula.tv/thatsabsurdshow. And finally, Maynard, what do we always say at the end of every episode? Remember, if you reproduce like plants, you're an ODB.